Good morning. We're going to go ahead and get started. My name is Emily McNeil, and I'm going to talk to you today about DKA. I will tell you that I have another talk 5 minutes after this in 107, so if you have any questions, I'm happy to answer them, just not directly after this talk. I'll loiter around here after my next one if you have any burning desire to ask me something. I don't have any financial disclosures. Today we're going to talk about DKA. Now, the official goals, I love official goals, but when I start working on talks, they end up veering a little bit. The official goals today are to discuss the differences and similarities between pediatric and adult DKA, to identify potential management errors that can lead to worse outcomes in pediatric patients, and that's what we're really going to focus on today, and then to talk a little bit about the insulin pump. Now, I will tell you that I see both adults and children. I work half and half, so I love taking care of adults in DKA because it's very simple. I can start my protocol and walk away. Children, especially small children, are not that simple. So said differently, we're going to talk about what happens to DKA. I'm not a huge pathophysiology fan, but there's a lot of things that we forget to think about with DKA that are really important when it comes to small children. We're going to talk about how to fix it in the ED. We're going to talk about four things. We're going to talk about fluids, insulin, potassium, and sodium bicarbonate. And if you can remember these four things, you will do a phenomenal job taking care of kids. And then, of course, what to do with the patient with a pump, because technology changes in this regard. We're not endocrinologists, and it's hard to know what to do when they come in with their little iPhone applications and what buttons do I push and how do I know if it's working. So is DKA on the rise? There was an article in JAMA 2015 out of Denver that said they had a 55% increase in DKA. Now, is the incidence of diabetes increasing, or is the initial presentation of children getting sicker mostly because of lack of access to care and increase in poverty? And that's what they attributed the rise to. So what better to help us talk about pediatric hyperglycemia than PEEPs? So they are going to be with us today to help us talk about Shogunwa. Thank you for the giggle. It's good. It's early. I understand. So what happens normally? Insulin binds to your receptors. Glucose can then move into your cells, and then cells can do stuff. This is the way I think about pathophysiology. Simple thinker. What happens in DKA? Well, glucose cannot get into the cell. The cells start to starve. And this is where things get interesting, because glucagon gets on the rise, growth hormone, and cortisol. And then what happens then is the PEEPs get more friends, right? So not only can glucose not move into the cell, but your body is producing it at a higher rate as well. So what happens when the glucose comes out? Water comes out as well, and this is something that we have to pay close attention to. And the cells start to shrink. They become dehydrated. And then, there's my shrunken PEEP up in the corner. These other foes of ours in DKA, cortisol, growth hormone, and glucagon, break down fatty acids, and you get your acidosis. That acidosis causes us additional problems because it pulls potassium out of cells, right? We all know this, but this is the fundamental thing that you have to think about when you see a patient with DKA, because these are going to be the things that you have to address with each patient. So one of the things that we love to do in emergency medicine is overestimate the severity of DKA. So I just want to talk about how pediatric endocrinologists talk about DKA. DKA is anybody with less than pH of less than 7.3, anybody with a bicarb of less than 15, and hyperglycemia with ketonuria and or ketonemia. Mild is a pH of less than 7.3 and a bicarb of less than 15, down to 10. So if you see a patient with a bicarb of 10, that's still mild DKA. When you see that lab pop up, you're not thinking, oh, this is a mildly sick patient. Their bicarb is 11, right? You start to think, ooh, this sounds serious, but that's still mild. Moderate DKA is a pH of less than 7.2 and a bicarb of less than 10, down to 5. You don't get severe DKA until your bicarb is less than 5. Now, I don't know about you, but when I see a bicarb of 7, I'm getting a little bit excited, but that's not severe DKA. Okay, so we tend to overestimate the severity of DKA in our patients. So what do you do? Mild DKA, this is sort of like the Wild West of pediatric diabetic ketoacidosis. No one really knows exactly the most advantageous way to manage these patients. It depends on a lot of different factors. So my recommendation is, if you can, talk to the patient's endocrinologist. Because, not because it's a complicated process to manage, but you don't, it's very interesting, if they know their patients, they might say, just do a few sub-Q doses of insulin, and we can manage this with oral hydration, right? Now, again, if you see a patient with bicarb of 12, that's not what we're accustomed to doing, right? We say, that's DKA. They need an insulin drip. But that's not what all patients get in the pediatric endocrine world. So oftentimes I'll use subcutaneous insulin. Oftentimes I'll use oral hydration to get these patients back to a normal physiologic state. The lower limit of doing that is unknown and varies from practitioner to practitioner. It varies from varies according to the age of the patient, according to their compliance. There are lots of factors that go into this. So just know that you might have a fairly sick patient that you think is requiring an insulin drip, and you talk to their endocrinologist, and they may say, no, it's okay, just give them some sub-Q insulin, give them a bunch of fluids to drink, and let's see how they do. They can correct fairly quickly. When you get to the moderate or severe, there are three things you have to do and you have to think about every single time, and that's replace lost fluids, and we're going to talk about that because that's an area where we can mess things up. You need to give them insulin, of course, and then you need to replace potassium. So how is this not like adults? So when I see an adult in DKA, I write my fluid boluses and my insulin drip, and then I go on and I see the next patient. I would warn you that that's probably not the best method for a child with DKA, especially if they are young. So cerebral edema is responsible for 60 to 90% of all deaths due to DKA. The mortality rate is about 1 in 5 if you get it, and 1 in 3 will have permanent neurologic deficits. This is a big deal and much more common in children, especially very young children, than it is in adults. So how does it happen? We have no idea, which is why this is tricky. It could be because the cells themselves, right? We showed that picture of the cell getting smaller as water leaves it. Does the cell itself get edematous? Is this a vasogenic process that as we increase fluid perfusion, you get extracellular edema in the brain? That may be. But we also know that you can see edema in the brain even before you start resuscitation. This is a complex problem. But I will tell you that if you are overly aggressive in managing your pediatric DKA, you have a higher likelihood of getting cerebral edema, and that has bad outcomes. So assessing dehydration is like making a homemade peep. We do not do this well in patients with DKA. Why is it so difficult for us? One is that glucose that's sitting in the blood vessels makes it hyperosmolar, and your intravascular volume is actually preferentially preserved. So the patient is going to be dry. We know that because they have polyuria. But you may not see it on your vital signs because that intravascular volume is preserved. Your urine output is preserved, right? You have polyuria. And so you can't use that as a measure of dehydration. You can look at the patient, and they can look incredibly dry. Their mouth and mucous membranes can be dry, but they have Kussmaul respirations. So you can overestimate the degree of dehydration there. The cortisol that we talked about increasing because of the elevated glucose and the low insulin, the high glucagon, that will increase your blood pressure, but not a true reflection of volume. It will just have an increase in pressure. So what we want to do is just assume. We're going to assume they're dehydrated, and we're going to assume that they're 7 to 10% dehydrated. Now, the trick of this is that you are not going to replace all that volume. If you replace that volume in the ED, you have a much higher likelihood of causing harm in that patient. Okay. This dehydration needs to be replaced over 48 hours. Okay, that's really important. It's so tempting to look at a dry patient and say, I need to give you all this fluid and correct this 100%. But that's not a good strategy for these patients. Patients with DKA did not get there in 20 minutes, right? They're not hemorrhaging out their blood volume. This has been happening over days. And so don't replace it over hours. So fluids, this is a place where we can really burn ourselves. Be very careful with your fluid hydration. Normally, I hate things that vary, and so normally I love my 20 cc per kilo bolus, but especially the younger DKA patient, the 3-year-old, the 4-year-old, I am not giving 20 cc per kilo boluses. I'm giving 10. Why? Because they didn't get there very quickly, and I don't want to correct them too quickly. Normal saline or lactated ringers is fine. My max is 30 mLs per kilo, unless, of course, they are in complete cardiovascular compromise. This is not the patient that I'm talking about. I'm talking about the dry, acidotic DKA patient who's tachypneic that you're really worried about and you really want to give a lot of fluids to. be careful. Max of 30 in the first 4 hours, unless they're in true cardiovascular collapse, obviously, okay? But we tend to over-resuscitate children, and there are a couple problems with that. One is the cerebral edema that we talked about, but the other is that children are remarkably sensitive to fluids in regards to their sugar. So their sugar will start to drop precipitously, but they're still acidotic. So now you're limiting how much insulin you could give them because you've drowned them with fluids, and then you can't correct their acidosis. So give them fluids, absolutely. If they're in cardiovascular collapse, obviously we're going to be more aggressive, but that's not the vast majority of patients with DKA that you see. So what do we do after the bolus? Don't drop the sodium too much. So people get really funny about pediatric IV fluids, right? I want to do half normal. I want to do three-quarter normal. I want to, you know, they get really creative. We don't want to drop the sodium too much in these patients. So you can at least use half normal saline. And you can continue to use normal saline at a 1.5 times maintenance rate. There's no reason to stop using normal saline if that's what's available to you and easiest for you to get to. Which is better? We have no idea. So PCARN is now working on this. They are doing a post-bolus resuscitation comparison of half-normal versus normal saline. They are still in the early processes of that, so we probably won't know that information for a couple years. But the answer is we don't know, so do what's easiest for you. Insulin. This is another place where we can get ourselves into trouble. So first of all, don't start your insulin until after your fluid bolus. Why? Because children are very fluid sensitive. Their glucoses will drop. And what you don't want to do is take away your ability to give them insulin because you've dropped your sugar too much, or start your insulin too aggressively and drop your sugar too much. So start after your fluid bolus in the first 1 to 2 hours. It's very tempting to want to go and correct this right away because you see such dramatic laboratory abnormalities. But a little bit of caution and a little bit of patience will serve you well. Never, ever, ever give a child an insulin bolus. Ever. We don't need to do it. So the data in adults isn't clear, but it is harmful for children. No insulin boluses ever, ever, ever. So before I start insulin in a three-year-old, I'm talking to someone, and I am pediatric emergency medicine trained. Because once you start insulin, you can get kids into a lot of trouble. They're not as stable as an adult patient in DKA. You can't just start the drip at 0.1 units per kilo per hour and walk away. Their sugars are much more dynamic. So if they're young or if their sugars aren't that high, because these are patients that you're going to need to be very closely monitored. So remember that the blood sugar drops greatly with just fluids. I can't overemphasize that enough. So if you start everything together, chances are you will drop them too fast. Insulin. So the common order set for our adult patients is 0.1. Even for some reason, we do 0.14. I have no idea why that is. Units per kilo per hour. That might be overly aggressive in children, and we're still working this out. There's some good data this year in JAMA Pediatrics about using 0.05 units per kilo per hour. Remember, we want the insulin to close the gap, not necessarily to drop the sugar too much. So there have been multiple small retrospective studies using 0.05 units per kilo per hour. They may have fewer episodes of hypokalemia. They might have as much issues with potassium with this lower dose. And it's certainly showing like it's not inferior to 0.1 units per kilo per hour. Again, these patients are, you're walking a much finer line than you are with adults. So anything that we can do to negate some of the effects of the drugs that we give is going to be beneficial. So look for this. If they're young or if they have a glucose in the 300 to 400 range as when you get started, this might be the insulin dose that you're starting, and that's fine. It will correct your acidosis just as readily. Less than this dose, and you're not going to correct your acidosis. Potassium. They're going to need it, right? They are urinating out their potassium. If it's low, you may need to give it before you start your insulin. We're always so excited to start the insulin drip on DKA, but you might need to correct some, you're going to need to correct some things in children before you begin that medication. If it's normal, you want to start with your hydration and then your insulin with your with potassium. And if it's elevated, you're just going to wait for them to pee, and then you're going to give them potassium anyway. Okay, remember, they're total body potassium depleted. Fluid resuscitate first, though. The first thing that a patient DKA should get is is normal saline. The reason is if you have a child with a potassium of 2.9 and they are incredibly volume constricted or volume down, and you give them potassium, their potassium will shoot up to 9, and then you have a whole host of other issues that you didn't want to deal with. Okay? So fluid first, start to expand that intravascular volume, then think about your potassium, then think about your insulin. So 40 milliequivalents of potassium per liter, we split that between potassium chloride and potassium phosphate, not because we like to haggle over the details, but because we, and it's not for us. We're not doing that for their emergency resuscitation. But we know that if they get too much potassium chloride, it exacerbates their acidosis as they get treatment in the hospital. So that's why they have us break it up, not to be tedious, but really it helps them in the long run. Sodium bicarbonate, please stop the madness, okay? The recommendations for sodium bicarbonate are only if you have a pH of less than 6.9 and that's not a single value, and they have vasodilation or decreased cardiac contractility that you attribute to the profound acidosis. Does that make sense? So it's not just that they're dry, but you have to think, this patient is so acidotic now that their heart isn't working and now I need to help correct. That is the only time children with DKA should be getting sodium bicarbonate. Or if they have life-threatening hyperkalemia, which we know will rarely ever happen unless we cause it, by giving potassium before fluid hydration. Those are the patients who should get sodium bicarbonate. Nobody else benefits from it. So to review the DKA portion of things, fluids first, saline or lactated ringers, use 10 cc's per kilo per bolus each time. You can give more, but no more than 30 to 40 in the first 4 hours. Do not bolus your insulin. Know that insulin dosing might be lower in younger kids if you talk to your endocrinologist. Potassium, if it's low, start giving it after the fluid bolus before the insulin. If it's normal, give it with the insulin. And if it's high, wait for them to pee and then give it to them. Bicarb, no. If you have a child in DKA who you're giving bicarbonate to, that's a patient to panic over. And again, unless you have shock from acidosis or life-threatening hyperkalemia. So let's talk about the pump a little bit. You know, pump technology changes so dramatically that they show it to me, and you know, it's got 70,000 functions and 2 buttons, and I don't know what each company does and how they manage their pumps. But there are a few things that you should know about the pump. In theory, it's easier to go into DKA with a pump. This is why they select their pump patients very, very carefully. These are patients who have very motivated families, who can understand how to use the pump, who can manage any problems that they have. So these are fairly sophisticated families that get these to begin with. Remember, it's short-acting insulin that they're getting at a constant rate. So if in the nighttime the child sweats a lot and it pulls out, they might go into DKA just because all the insulin that they're receiving is very short-acting. In actuality, we see probably fewer incidents of DKA, mostly due to missed doses or if they get sick, and then about 10% of the time it's because the pump itself isn't working. There's a technical issue. But remember, pump success has a huge selection bias because we are already only giving it to children who have a lot of means and wherewithal to manage it. So what happens? The pump has an alarm and a battery that can fail. It has tubing. You have to prime your tubing. The tubing can occlude. It can disconnect. It can leak. So what do you do when you have hyperglycemia in the pump? First of all, stop using the pump. And that is something that's really easy to forget, is you keep it in or on, and you do other things. So make sure that the patient removes the pump. It sounds very simple, but you'd be amazed how often it happens. Again, disconnect the pump. Look at the site. You know, we often forget this, but remember, most of these patients are adolescents, and our adolescents are inherently untrustworthy, right? Just like adults, not as savvy. So what they'll do is they won't move their pump around as often as they should, and they get something called lipohypertrophy, or pump bumps. And pump bumps don't absorb insulin very well, so make sure you're looking at the site. Diagnose what's going on with this pump. Also, make sure they don't have infection. Children who are just learning how to put the pump in themselves will often not put the needle in as far as it needs to go because they're a little shy about it. They don't want it to hurt. And in that case, they're not measuring their insulin well enough, and they're not going to be they're not measuring their glucose well enough, and they're not going to be delivering enough insulin. So kind of talk to them about their pump. You don't need to understand the technology aspect of it to diagnose most pump problems. So remember, please, that DKA is a much more tenuous condition in a child, especially a young child. Remember to replace what they need slowly. This did not happen within the last few hours. You do not need to correct it in the ED. So no massive fluid boluses, no insulin boluses. Your potassium is going to be very important after fluids with your insulin. And if you think you need bicarb, think again and again and again if that's really the case. And remember always to check your sight of your pump patient. Okay. Thank you very much. Okay, so far.